Greet you in Jesus' name. Just want to thank you all for being a blessing to me and my family this week as well. It's been an encouragement to be with you. And I sort of knew some people here. And it's a blessing to, when you think of a place to have faces, to have friends that come to your mind, and that's one of the privileges of, I guess, that comes to me in something like this. Sometimes the hard part is you have so many friends in so many places, you don't really keep up with them very well, but pray for us, and we would invite, if you're traveling through Northeast Arkansas, to come and visit us, and we'd be happy to share what we have with you as well, and thank you for your sharing with us the kind cards and I sort of like to tease my wife and daughters that often when I preach, they're the ones that get the things. So, and that's fine. Please understand the cards were aplenty for me. But they really enjoy that too. So thank you for sharing. Okay. You've been very gracious. I might just stretch it a bit. I'm going to rearrange the front of the church here just slightly, if you don't mind. I think I can put it back. So bear with me a minute. I've titled what I have to share tonight, Who is the Strongest Man? And I'm not excluding you ladies, so you can also say who's the strongest woman. Maybe I'll focus on this side a bit. So who's the strongest man here? Anybody? Volunteer that? Sim sort of warned us about comparisons this morning, didn't he? So we probably shouldn't go there. Maybe we should just ask, how many really strong men do we have here tonight, huh? Probably for us as men, we relate to strength perhaps a bit differently than the ladies, and that's nothing wrong with that. I'll tell you an interesting observation about strength is at the Bible school I've been involved a number of years, we have the boys' evening, the boys' talk, purity talks, usually in a shed there that's on the compound that we rent. And the man that owns or lives there in this shed or this workshop, he has an old anvil, you know what I mean? One of those big things that are made to work on. And it's fascinating. He's sitting on a block of wood, probably from the platform, the block of wood. It's a big chunk of wood about that high, and it's just setting loose on there. And it's irresistible for boys to come in there and see if they can pick this thing up. You know, they have to do it. And it doesn't stop with the students, actually. I tell you, I was sort of proud of myself. I thought I looked like I was hefting that thing about as good as any of them. So I thought I didn't lose it all yet, right? So we like picking up that thing and seeing how we can, if we can handle this or not. Other ways that for us men that sometimes are important when it comes to strength is, how far can you throw? How fast can it go? How much power does it have? You know, how many row header does it have on, maybe? Or yeah, we could keep going. It's all manifestations of strength, isn't it? Our power, in a way. And so in that way, this is a continuation of this morning, perhaps. I'm trying to make this practical. I'll just tell you, this message comes out of a intense struggle in my own life. And it's fairly basic in some ways, and yet it's something I very much need. Probably for us men, especially the less years we have on us, probably the more almost it means to us is if somebody wants to give us a compliment, if they say, you're really strong, that feels pretty good, doesn't it? I don't know. I just think I still like it. You know, I told you I'm heaving around that anvil just with the best of them or trying to. Got to enjoy it while I can, you know. You're really strong. I'm guessing on this side of the house, maybe if I wanted, or I or someone else wants to give you a compliment, perhaps saying you're really strong ain't necessarily the top of the list for you. But I have noticed something about ladies, at least some of the ones I live with, is it's a form of strength as well that they appreciate. And I've got some ladies I live with that I love very much. They have this tendency to try to be superwomen. Do you know what I mean by that? They just think they can get everything done in a day. And I'm like, just cut back here. I mean, let's have some time to go fishing, you know? And they just try to do so many things in a day. So maybe they're not trying to lift it all at one time, but they sure try to lift a lot in little bitty pieces. And sometimes I'm just like, just scale back. I think it's also a way of appreciation of strength. They sort of admire somebody that can really get a lot done. And sometimes when you sort of, from your masculinity counsel, a lady that maybe she should just not quite try to do so much. She tells you, well, so-and-so gets such and such much done, you know, and all that. And it's pretty interesting. So I guess they value strength too, would you say? Just maybe a little different angle of it. And that's okay. I've been blessed with a wife and a niece. And I think my oldest daughter's starting too. They just like to get stuff done. And I admire that, as long as we don't overdo it. And another way that I would say you ladies admire strength is, I think a lot of times you, I've seen it in ladies, is you appreciate strength in those that you love, and you also find security in their strength. It's sort of handy to have somebody around that can open a can lid that you are struggling to get off or something in it. And I'm glad to be of service. After all, I told you that's still important to me, right? I got a heaving hand, but I should be able to crank that lid off if you need it. So different ways we combat strength. So let me ask you this. Does the desire for an appreciation of strength play a negative role in how we perceive strength? It's a question I've been asking myself. Does the desire for strength and the appreciation of strength play a negative role in how we perceive strength? In other words, if I break that down, we have our perception of what strength is, whether it's how many horsepower it has, how many headers are on it, how much it can lift, how fast it can go, or how much it can get done, how much protection it provides. We all use that as metrics or ways to measure strength. And is that perception of strength sometimes actually different from the perception of strength that God would have us have? Does God perhaps see strength a bit differently? Does the way I view strength, how I think of strength, how does that play out in the way, in what I expect in life? And when things come to me in life, challenges, trials, things I did not expect, and my perception of strength is one way, how do I respond? I don't know, probably with my experience here, which is totally fine. You know what? We had a preacher at our church some years ago, and he said, y'all are just the quietest church I've ever been at. I'm going to send him to Dublin for you, so just let me know. But you're all good. I don't mean that bad. It's good to be quiet. I told you God works through quiet rather than flamboyant. So, you know, God's working here, right? Did anybody want to come up and wrestle me? Anybody over here want to? That's fine. I'm not going to wrestle you right now anyways. We can maybe do it later if you're hard up. You know, if I had the privilege of talking to, one of your sister congregations at this point has that children's ministry there in Elm Street, Lebanon, Elm Street congregation. And I had the privilege of being with their young men camping trip where they take the, 14, 13 to 20-some-year-olds, whatever age, they take them there in a boys' camp near Pine Grove. And I shared part of this talk with them, and I asked if somebody wants to wrestle me, and one of those came up, and he really did. I thought maybe I was in trouble for a little bit. And this tough boy off of the streets of Lebanon come up there, and he was all into this. We had a good time. So now let's say that one of you would have volunteered like that young man did to wrestle me, and just before we would have gotten into it, I would have mentioned to him that I have a black belt in karate. Do you think that would have changed his attitude? You all know what that is. It's a form of self-defense, I guess. Or yeah. I'm guessing it would if he knew anything about karate, because a black belt, I believe, is one of the higher levels. So what would change? It's not that my physical strength, it's not that I would get bigger, as I would say. You know, I have a black belt in karate. It's not like that suddenly Joe would gain about 50 pounds and be a foot taller and, you know, and much more muscular. But what would change is this. Is it would become, rather than just a match of sheer physical strength, it would become a match of how to use strength, right? We would no longer now just be seeing who's got the most brawn, if you want to say it that way, but now we would be who knows how to use what he has to the best effect. And keep that in mind as I keep talking here. I had another illustration I wanted to give. I thought it might keep at least the boys with me for a little bit here. Y'all know what this is? Oh, it's an arrow, or sometimes called a crossbow bolt, if it's small like this. I haven't tried on this particular target before, but I think, how many of you think if I throw this at the target, I can get it to stick in? Let's change it. Rather than just stick in, let's say I want to stick it in, I don't know, at least a couple inches to half of a shaft length. Do you think I can throw it that hard? You don't? Well, guess what? Rather than make a fool of myself, I'm going to tell you I know I can't because I tried. I can't even get it to stick in most of them. Now, maybe if you got a little sharper point. But the point being that I know I can't, therefore, actually, I can. I know how. You want to watch me? I'll show you. I know I can't, so therefore I get me some help, right? I will try to keep this as safe. Okay, I just told you I know I can't, and so therefore I find a way to make this work. Woo! I went even further than I planned. I got it way in there, didn't I? Pull that out a little bit. Okay, let that there for now. Now you can think about that. So the fact of the matter is, by myself, taking an arrow, I could take another one here, and I guess show you, I don't mind making a fool out of myself in that way. I'm not sure I should have practiced, but yeah, it wasn't even a good throw. But even if I would have hit the point, it usually bounces out. Maybe that one's a bit softer than some. Maybe if I'd hit just perfect, it would stick a little bit. I don't know. But you see, I know my limitation, at least to some extent. So I'm aware that without some assistance, I cannot really accomplish what I would like to accomplish. I've tried. Therefore, in recognizing that I'm too weak to do it, if you want to call it that, I find a way to do it. I'd like to mention some names of men that did the same thing. Gideon. He had a job to do he couldn't do. I'm going to talk about him more, so I'll stop there. David. David was given quite a few things to do that he couldn't do. Fighting the Philistines time after time, there was no way, David, if you look at some of those numbers, it just doesn't work. You can't do it. And yet he did. Solomon, early in his reign, you know, mentioned that he can't lead the children of Israel. And therefore, he actually made a really good king till he forgot that again. Daniel. I don't know if you could find a person that was given more, I don't know, difficult, strange thing in life, if you really think about what Daniel went through, if you stop him. But he was amazing. And all these men were strong. We would call them strong men, right? At least at certain times in their life. You know, Solomon sort of failed later on. David had his times. But they were all strong, yet they were strongest when they realized that they were weak, right? They were strong when they realized that they were weak, when they didn't have what it took. So let me ask you a question tonight. Are you weak? Do you have what it takes? I've enjoyed my time here, and I've enjoyed visiting with some of you, and we haven't visited in depth with anyone. But I know enough about people and human nature to catch a whiff of a couple of you maybe feeling a bit overwhelmed with some things that you're facing in life. And I'm guessing that you would say, if I would ask you personally, are you weak? You would say yes. Do you have what it takes? You'd probably say no. Here's my answer to that. Good. Good. Acknowledgement of weakness is the first step in finding strength. Acknowledgement of weakness is the first step in finding strength. That's hard, friends. It's hard to say I'm just not big enough. I'm just not man enough for this. I'm just not woman enough for this. It really, really hurts. Makes us feel sort of, well, week. Would you open your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, please? Have something about a man that we probably consider very strong that's admitting a struggle with weakness. 2 Corinthians 12, just to make sure I said the right one here. 2 Corinthians 12, I'd like to read, I think we'll read from verse 5. I give you a little of the backdrop here. Paul is talking about glorying. He seems to be indicating some of the experiences he had in coming to Christ and after his conversion there. And somehow some of the amazing revelations and things that maybe carried him through life. But then he says this, beginning at verse 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 5, talking of himself, I believe, of such an one I glory, somebody that God has worked in their life. Yet he says, yet of myself I will not glory, but in mine infirmities. In other words, he's saying, with the experiences I've had, I'm amazed at God. And I could almost glory in myself that God gave me this blessing. Yet he says, I'm not going to glory about myself, except in my infirmities, in my weakness. That's what I'm going to keep in focus. Let's go on. For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool. For I will say the truth, but now I forbear, or he holds off, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth me to be. In other words, he's saying, I could say a lot of things, and you probably would think really well of me if I would tell you everything that God has shown me. But he says, I'm going to hold off on that. I don't need to make an impression, and you might not even believe it if you saw me later, if you heard me later. Verse 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of revelations, in other words, lest he become lifted up, proud in his heart, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. So Paul says that God allowed Satan to bring something into his life that kept him humble, I guess would be the simple way of saying this, something that he struggled with. So let's see what happened. Verse 8, for this thing, or because of this problem, I besought the Lord three times, that it might depart from me. And this was God's answer. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness. May I reread God's answer to Paul when he asked to be rid of this problem? My grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Paul's answer now. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. When I realize I am weak, it gives me the opportunity to be strong. I don't know about you, friend, tonight, whatever you're facing, but how Joe struggles when he feels weak. That's tough. It's really, really tough. I want to give you a couple things to think about. Strength and weakness is found, I don't know if I should say in or through, we'll say in, it's less, you could probably use either one, perhaps the other one better. So the first one, actually, I'll let that, we've got one, two, and three. I'll give you those as we get to them. I thought of reading the story of Gideon, but I think I'll tell you, you know it somewhat, and so I'll try to bring out some of the statistics. Gideon. Would any of you wanted to be Gideon? You think you have a little tough time in life? Would you want to trade places with Gideon if we could somehow put you in a time machine and change places with Gideon? You want to try that? Any of you young men want to try to be Gideon? Looks like you might be making a wise choice, huh? Stay in Dublin, Georgia. Gideon was a man asked to do a big job. If I did my math correctly, the job he was given was to basically, and in the long run, rescue Israel from the Midianites. And with the numbers we're given, I have no idea how many people there were, but it seems like there was 135,000 soldiers from what I can read in the Bible. 135,000. So if you think of how many support groups, I don't know how they traveled, if they had their families along, but it was a lots of people. And Gideon wasn't a dumb man. When he was given this job to do, he just as surely knew he couldn't do it as I know I can't throw that thing completely through that target. I know I can't. And he was scared. And so he knew he couldn't do what God was asking of him to do. And he realized he was weak. Maybe we could argue that Gideon forgot that there was somebody that could give him strength. There was a other way to do this. But either way, because of his weakness, he asked God for help, which is the right thing to do, for reassurance. And you know, God gave him several signs to help him have courage. I forget the order now, but you know, he had that fleece, a piece of wool, and he asked God one time, I think, to have the ground be wet with dew, but the fleece dry, and sure enough, God answered. Next time, he's like, well, God, could we reverse this? Let's have the fleece be wet and the ground dry, and that time, the fleece was so wet that he could wring all kinds of water out of it. Pretty amazing. Heavy dew in one little spot, huh? God answered, and not only that is, God also gave him some other things, but with this, I do feel that Gideon asking God for reassurance, perhaps God has said, okay, Gideon, I reassure you, but with reassurance, you also pay a price. I make this tougher for you, maybe. I don't know. I've wondered why God did some of this. He didn't do it often like this. So Gideon got an army together. So remember, he has 135,000 other soldiers, whatever that he's supposed to be fighting with in the long run. He ends up, when he gathers everybody he could come up with, or however that worked, he had 32,000. 32,000. So it was about 1-4, if I'm doing math right, a little bit more. That's not real great. Even if I would take any volunteer to come up here and wrestle with me, if four of you came, I'd have to run somewhere, I don't know, you know? And this wasn't just a wrestling match. I mean, this was war. And so poor Gideon, or I say poor Gideon as a man, 32,000 people, you're like, God, you know, this is plenty of room for you to show some strength here. We don't need to cut this down anymore. And God looks at those 32,000 people and he says, Gideon, you got way too many people here. Can you imagine if I'd have been in Gideon's shoes, like, what? You crazy or something? This is way, way terrible odds. Well, we know God told him to tell everybody that's scared to go home. I might have my number slightly off here. I should have double-checked some of this. And don't you know, most of those fellas go home. I mean, he was down to a couple thousand, right? I'm thinking three, but I may be wrong, whatever it was. And I mean, if you go from 32,000 to 3,000 or 1,500, whatever it was, it's, I don't know, that's still a lot of people when you think of a Mennonite church, but when you think of an army, that's just pretty small. You ain't gonna do much, especially when you got 135,000 people to fight with. And Gideon, like, I don't know what, you know, just a normal man thinking what he thought, like, I don't know, this is really bad. And God looks at that and he says, Gideon, I don't know if you noticed, but God cut him down the exact amount of times that he asked for a sign. So maybe it had something to do with that. He said, Gideon, still too many folks here. how bad do you want these odds to be, God? Do you would rather just me go do it all? No. So he says, anyway, he gave him this test to go drink water. And those that bent over and drink water, you're supposed to keep track of how they drink. Or those that just drink out of the water with their mouth, or those that lift up water to their with their hand and drink. And so he gets narrowed down to 300 men. 300 men. Now, I don't really care what you're doing, but all of us, even if we've not been in the military, probably can understand that you don't go fight 135,000 men with 300 men, right? I mean, the math ain't there. But that's what God asked Gideon to go. Now, he did reassure Gideon, sent him down, heard this story about what was going to happen. And, you know, God stepped in, and big things happened when it was impossible. a lot of people that were too scared to do anything, even these fellows that went home because they were scared, found courage in watching Gideon. And they came out from wherever they was hiding. And they helped him with what he was given to do. And an impossible battle, a total improbability, became a rout of the enemy. Something that anybody would have said was foolish, couldn't happen, happened. And it'd be interesting to stop there, but one thing that intrigued me is if you read that passage, after the battle was over, some of the ones that came quite late to the battle that came up to Gideon, and they were angry. And they were like, why didn't you ask us to come? And, you know, that would have been pretty useless for Gideon to go find more people because after all, God knocked out most of what he had. But they're like, why didn't you call us? We'd have been glad to help. Why did you avoid us? And Gideon told them, I just loved his response. He says, you know, when y'all harvest grapes in your part of the country, your droppings, the leavings, what you let is as many as we have in all our vineyards put together. He said, I mean, you fellows have it together. And he says, you know, I didn't exclude you. In my words, I didn't exclude you. You all are so much better than me. I didn't basically almost dare help. And, you know, even in this war, he said, it's the same way. He said, you all really did the important part. I just did the little bit I could. Please don't be angry. We couldn't have done it without you. So, think about Gideon as we go through the rest of this. So, how strong men and women face problems and struggles in life. I'm going to give you three things. I call them the three H's. And the first one is honesty. Strength and weakness is found in honesty. Honesty with myself. Honesty with others. May I make a bit of a hard statement to you? I do not believe that Mennonite culture has any better grasp of honesty than any other culture. Maybe you think that's offensive. I don't mean it that way. But just naturally, as people, we find honesty just as much work as the next person. I'm not saying that y'all sitting here tonight are liars. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying honesty is just as hard work for me as for my neighbor. Also, I'm not at all saying that we don't have honest people. I believe most of you are, thank God. But honesty is just as big a challenge for me as it is for anyone. And in saying that, I think perhaps we focus our honesty, and to some degree rightly so, that we don't say whoppers, you know. That's what you call them down Arkansas way, just whoppers. Whether it's a fish story or something else, you say the truth. And that's great. But friends, honesty doesn't stop with simply not telling, stretching my fish a foot longer than he was. Honesty enters into all kinds of parts of life. Let me give you an illustration of what I'm talking about when I'm saying we struggle with honesty. This is a story of a medical doctor who was trained intensely for her job. And yet, as she witnessed the pain, the suffering, she was basically trained to not have any feelings about that. There was one time when she was an intern, a small boy, I think he was 8 years old, fighting cancer, died as she was there. And she and a friend that were there at the time, just the pain, the loss, was overwhelming for them. And they stood at the foot of his bed just crying for a while. And a doctor actually came, the doctor that was responsible for him. And I guess in Arkansas, we would say chewed them out for letting their feelings get the best. They said, you can't have feelings for someone because it's going to hinder your performance, hinder you from serving the rest. So she tried to become callous to the suffering and the deaths of the people that she cared for. You know, the thing that was interesting is different ones of those in her class, medical school, either walked away from the medical field to pursue other careers. I think there was at least two in the class she was part of that committed suicide because they just couldn't handle the grief, the trauma of working with death and diseases and all such. the things that they faced, and yet they were supposed to be professionals that didn't have any feelings. And years later, she actually ended up as a patient in her own hospital with some intense things, and that's what basically it was about. But one thing that started through that process, her and some others started sharing time where they would just come together and be honest about the things they faced as they watched their patients die, as they faced the grief, the loss. And they would actually just open up and help each other, just be there to be there for each other. And you know, the interesting thing is, her observation was it made a huge difference in their personal lives, how they related to their families at home. And she would have said they cared much better for their patients in the long run because they could be honest rather than deny. And yet, I'm not here to talk to you about being a medical doctor per se, but I think we have the same problem, don't we? Where it's much easier to sometimes shove it underneath the rug, to try to deny when we're struggling. And friends, that's not the way to strength. If we're going to be strong, we got to be willing to show that some things are tough. We do. Having the ability to share and process the experiences makes a huge difference in how we approach this thing. It's strength to say, I have a problem here. I don't know how to handle this. It's strength to admit weakness, to admit mistakes, to admit misunderstandings, to admit when you're hurt. And I don't really know you this well, but I so hope and pray that you're a church where people can, no, not live in sin, but where they can come and be open about their life and struggles. Because friends, there's way too many churches out there where we're sort of putting on this false front on our storefront, if you will. We want to look good. And yet, when you open the doors, it's not so good. And we're pretending. True strength begins with honesty. Why don't y'all stand for a bit? True strength begins with honesty. And that can come out in a lot of ways. For example, honesty says that I know that some things, some situations will get me in trouble. Therefore, strength stays away. I cannot spend a lot of time with certain people because I will get in trouble. Guess what? I cannot go certain places because I will fall if I go there. I cannot do certain things because I will not live victoriously if I involve myself. I cannot expose myself to certain influences because it will affect how I think. I'm not strong enough. In saying I'm not strong enough, I become strong because I'm being honest, and honesty makes me strong. We could go all kinds of places, but you know what? Let's just start with one of these things. Honesty says that I'm not strong enough to pack one of these around in my pocket without accountability, without having it, at least for me, locked down to some extent. I'm just not strong enough. And sometimes we have people that want to rebel against that in our churches. And you know what? I say, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just saying I'm not strong enough. And as I say I'm not strong enough, I can at least start working on it, right? You know, friends, one thing that tears my heart is I have a friend that's in eternity because he was too strong to ask for help, and it killed him. I have a brother I love dearly who spent years hiding something. Because I guess he was too strong to show it. And it tears up my heart, friends. You can sit back down if you can stay awake. I'm not strong enough. You know, all this honesty brings a tremendous amount of vulnerability. Oh, at least for me, how I hate making myself vulnerable. And guess what? This reassurance isn't the word. I'm going to just be frank with you. People who struggle with being honest themselves will misjudge and misconstrue honesty as weakness. Trust me. When you're honest, sooner or later, somebody will come into your life that says, yeah, you're just a bad person, basically. I've had it done. Don't let them faze you. Honesty is the only way. Let me ask you this. What is the base or root of running from making yourself vulnerable? When I hesitate to make myself vulnerable, what is in my heart that keeps me from it? Pride. I've only come up with one thing, and that's that word, pride. Pride. Do I really, really want pride to keep me from being honest before God, before others? Okay, that brings me to the second one here,
which is humility.
You know, pride has a multitude of expressions and feelings. Again, I don't mean this critically, but I'm trying to be honest with you tonight. One of the greatest manifestations of pride within the Mennonite church is pretended strength, where we pretend we're okay, where we pretend we've got it together, where we pretend we don't need help, where we pretend we haven't been hurt. I hate to appear weak. I want to have it all together. I hate to admit failure. Makes me feel so stupid when I fail. I want to be a winner in life. I hate to say I don't have what it takes. After all, what man is so worthless? I hate asking for help. I'd like to be able to do it on my own. Years ago, I was involved in an intense church that was having some intense problems. As we sat there in a circle with that brotherhood trying to work through some things, the one man, I guess he didn't like that some of us were there trying to help, and he said, "We're just man enough to take care of this ourselves." And I've been glad if they would have been. It's not, they didn't need me for sure. Maybe the rest of them could have helped. But you know what, friends? The actual fact about Joe, I don't know him, is that Joe is not man enough to do it by himself. When I express all these things that I don't want help, I have what it takes. I can't admit failure. I don't want to appear weak. Where does that all come from again? Anybody want to tell me? Pride. Nothing more than pride. Humility lays aside pride and stubbornness and admits that I need help. I'm just not big enough or strong enough for this. Would you please be there for me? You know, for any of us to think that we can somehow successfully do things on our own, that we've got it together, that we've got it, that we're going to make this work, is just as foolish as it would be. You might think it'd be humorous, at least for a little bit, if I'd stand here and hurl this thing at this target, insisting that I couldn't sink it in. Or what? Hey, Tony, would you let me use your deer stand out there? And I could go sit up there with this little thing, and I'd throw it at the deer as they come by. You know, the deer would laugh at me. But yet, we say, that's dumb. He needs some help. So do you, if you think you can live life. The essence of faith is trusting in and relying on the strength of another. The essence of faith is trusting in and relying on the strength of another. A person with pride in their heart cannot and will not do this, rely on someone else's strength. You can't do it. I need humility. When humility is in my heart, I will make myself vulnerable, for that is the way of humility. 1 Peter 5, verse 5, the last part of the verse says this, "And be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble." I don't know if you ever stopped and thought about this, but be clothed with humility. I would say humility is about the craziest thing you could use to wear for protection, isn't it? Clothed with humility. Guess what? When I'm clothed with humility and a brother comes and says, "Joe, what about this or what about that?" Does it offer much defense? I don't think so. But it's what God wants us clothed with humility. Because God resisteth the proud but giveth grace. We could say strength to the humble. Being clothed with humility does not offer protection, but it offers strength God's way. It's strength God's way. Okay. And that brings me on to the third H, I need help. I'm going to make myself a little vulnerable here. There's been many times in my life when others have seemed to be more of a hindrance than a help. Ever seemed like that to you? Many times others will seem more of a hindrance than a help. And unfortunately, there may be times that that's true. I don't totally throw that out. Have you ever had someone in your life that you could very well have done without? I don't guess you probably experienced home life, school life, church life, business life, if there's not a couple of those hiding in a corner somewhere. Those that you could have just done without. Have you ever had someone who you thought was a friend, but when you needed them the most, they seemed to be anywhere but where you needed them? That's maybe one of the harder things you can experience. I don't know. It hurts, let's just say that. You know, when that happens, I don't know about you, but I can tell you about myself, is it makes me feel like clamming up. I just want to stay away from people and that person in particular. Yet, friends, that's not God's way. In the long view, in the journey of life, I need others. At times, I will need others for the comfort and help that they can give me. And thank God for those that give that. At times, I will need others to need me for the comfort and help that God wants me to give to others. Both are some of the ways that God makes the difficult times in life manageable. Include others in your life and experience, even a few of those that you'd rather do without. Is that safe to say? Include others in your life and experience, and make sure you include a few of those that you'd rather do without. Because through them, God will show you some things about yourself that you probably won't learn any other way. Let me also say this. I've been tempted, still am tempted, to build walls. The walls we build to keep others out will be the walls that end up keeping us in. You ever think about that? The walls we build to keep others out will be the walls that end up keeping us in. Strong men and strong women accept and embrace the thorns that accompany the roses. Yes, friends, I'm not going to deny, those thorns can be brutal. Yet in strength found through weakness, we accept the thorns as part of the beauty of a rose. So let's recap. Realize and acknowledge weakness. Unrecognized weakness loves to project and proclaim its strength. I'll tell you a little secret. If somebody comes into your life bragging about how strong they are, and boys, this goes even if you have to put on a big display of how strong you are physically even. Without fail, somebody that's just trying to project strength, without fail, they have a hollow core of weakness that they're afraid to acknowledge. Is that right? I would say, at least in my experience, and I'm not God, but almost always, if not always. Unrecognized weakness loves to project and proclaim strength. So let's realize and acknowledge weakness. Yours may be in a different area than mine, and that's fine, but acknowledge it. Second, be honest with number one here. I'm not smart enough. I'm not wise enough. I don't know it all. I can't experience it all. I need God. I need others. Be honest. I don't have it together. Three, be humble. Remember, humility makes you vulnerable. I need help. It's too big for me. I can't handle this. Yes, you feel small, but it's God's way to strength. And then I need help. I need others. A strong man knows he needs other people to be truly strong. Don't go it alone. Almost anything is better for having a friend go with you. You know, God's strength finds its perfection in those who recognize and accept their weakness, calling on Him for help. With His help, they can then proclaim, "When I am weak, when I am weakest, there have I found strength." Who's the strongest man or the strongest woman? I've often seen this portrayed as the one who has a natural strength in an area. And friends, tonight, I'd like to dispel that from your mind. The strongest man, the strongest woman is not the one with strength in a given area. The strongest man or the strongest woman is the one who has acknowledged their weakness, compensated for that weakness with God's strength, and thereby become much stronger than the strong.
Right?
Maybe one last thing a bit from my heart to some of you here. I didn't know if I should tell one or two of you this personally, but maybe I'll just say it here because perchance somebody else can use it. Life is challenging. Some of you, like I said, shared briefly that you're facing a difficult time in perhaps the work you're trying to do for God. And one thing that's been intensely difficult for me to learn in my journey with God, hope I can make sense in saying this, is to put my heart and soul into God's work, but not to own the work. It's difficult. It seems like there's something about us that when we just pour out our best into whatever God has given us to do, we sort of start claiming ownership without even meaning to. We don't have to sit down and say, I claim this project necessarily, but we give it our best. And in the process of giving it our best, I at least start thinking this is partly mine. And in that process, then, I will find myself carrying burdens that I wasn't meant to carry. I will come home and it's time to sleep and I won't be able to sleep. It'll be time to think about other things and it won't really work for me because I'm consumed with this. Friends, when you find that happening in your life, may I gently suggest that you have taken ownership of something that God wants you to give to Him. I'm not saying, yes, pour your heart into whatever God has given you to do. But at the end of the day, whenever it is, let's kneel down by our bed or wherever you pray and tell God, this is your problem. Can you just give me a good night's sleep? Because I'm not going to find a solution wrapping myself crazy. You know, whatever you're dealing with, probably generally this is in interpersonal relationships. God cares far more than you ever can for whatever the issue is that you're facing, the people that you're working with. And so do your best, but don't own it. I'll give you one illustration. Maybe a number of years ago, I had a young man. I was teaching school. And he was perhaps one of my students that struggled more than some. And I so wanted him to succeed, but yet he made some choices that made it hard. Life went on, and he continued to make life choices that were just on the edge in so many ways. Soon after, let's say he got married, and he started a job that we as leadership in our church did not feel was something he could do in his walk with God. And when we talked to him about it, he basically told us that it's his ministry. He had no time of the day to listen to anybody on it. And you know, with all I had invested in that young man over the years, that whole process almost took me out. It burned me up, used me up. I wanted so bad for him to be able to see, to understand, to accept, and yet I couldn't. And I think it was at that point maybe that God started bringing this to me, is do your best, Joe, but don't own the problems. It's mine. Learn from your mistakes. Where I could have done better, I'm not saying I couldn't have done better for that young man in some ways, because I'm sure I could have looking back. But at the end of the day, he made his choices, and I surrender him to God as well, just like everything else. And maybe I had labeled those bricks some other things this morning, but those bricks can sometimes be even the love and care of people, of wanting to do our best for God, where we start letting that burden become so heavy that we about can't continue in the work that God has for us because it just wipes us out. And friends, tonight, may I just ask you to go home find a quiet place with God, whatever is causing stress in your life, and just lay it out before Him and let Him have it. Because that's the only way to live. It's the only way to work. In a way, what I have to tell you last here seems almost, I don't know. As a man, I'm not sure. I still struggle with this whole thing enough. I'm not sure that I want you to remember this. It's the last thing I said here, but I think maybe it's the most important, is may we all be weak so that we find the strength of God. Right? Do you mind standing for prayer?